locked up in the rare books collection for the rest of the summer. Worse, she'd call Amma, and I would be carting the sisters to church every day in Aunt Grace's ancient Cadillac. Jump or stay in the boat. It wasn't really a decision, not anymore. I'd made it a long time ago, when I first got out of my car on Route 9, one night in the rain. I had jumped. There was no staying in the boat, not for me, whether Lena and I were together or not. I wasn't going to let John Breed or Seraphine or a missing star or the wrong kind of moon or some crazy caster skies stop me now. I owed the girl on Route 9 that much. Liv, I can find Lena. I don't know how, but I can. You can track the moon with your selenometer, right? I can measure variances in the magnetic pull of the moon, if that's what you're asking. So you can find the claiming moon. If my calculations are correct, if the weather holds, if the typical corollaries between the caster and mortal constellations stay true...
It was more of a yes or no question.
Liv tugged on one of her braids, thinking, Yes. If we're going to do this, we have to go before Amma and Marion wake up. Liv hesitated. As a keeper in training, she wasn't supposed to get involved. But every time we were together, we found our way to trouble.
Lena could be in a lot of danger.
Liv, if you don't want to come...
Of course I want to come. I've been studying the stars and the caster world since I was 5. All I've ever wanted was to be part of it. Up until a few weeks ago, the only thing I'd done was read about it and watch it through my telescope. I'm tired of watching. But Professor Ashcroft...
I had been wrong about Liv. She wasn't like Marion. She wouldn't be content shelving caster scrolls. She wanted to prove the world wasn't flat. Jump or stay in the boat, Keeper. Are you coming? The sun was rising and we were running out of time.
Are you sure you want me to?
She didn't look at me and I didn't look at her. The memory of the kiss that never happened hung between us.
You know anyone else with a spare selenometer and a mental map of missing caster stars?
I wasn't sure her variances or corollaries or calculations were going to help me, but I knew the song was never wrong. And the things I saw tonight proved it. I needed help, and so did Lena, even if what we had was over. I needed a keeper, even a runaway keeper with a crazy watch, looking for action everywhere but inside a book.
Jump, Liv said softly. I don't want to stay in the boat anymore.
She turned the handle on the screen door quietly without making so much as a click. Which meant she was going inside to get her stuff. Which meant she was going with me.
You sure?
I didn't want to be the reason she was going. At least, not the only reason. That's what I told myself. But I was full of crap.
You know anyone else dumb enough to search for a mythical place where a rogue supernatural is trying to call a claiming moon?
She smiled, opening the door.
As a matter of fact, I do.
June 18th. Outer doors. Summer school. Never stop learning if you want to start earning. That's what the letter board said, where it usually read, Go Wildcats. Liv and I stared up at it from the bushes lining the front steps of Jackson High.
I'm reasonably sure there are G's in learning and earning.
They probably ran out of G's. You know, graduation, GED, get out of Gatlin.
This was going to be tricky. Summer or not, Miss Hester would still be sitting in the attendance office, keeping watch on the front door. If you failed a class, you had to enroll in summer school. But that didn't mean you couldn't ditch, if you could get by Miss Hester. Even though Mr. Lee never made good on his threat to fail us for not showing up at the reenactment of the Battle of Honey Hill, Link had failed biology,
which meant I had to find a way to get inside. "Are we going to hang out in the bushes all morning?" Liv was getting cranky. "Give me a second. I've spent all my time thinking up ways to get out of Jackson. I never put much thought into how to get in. But we can't leave without Link." Liv smiled at me. "Never underestimate the power of the British accent. Watch and learn." Miss Hester looked over her glasses at Liv, who had twisted her blonde hair into a bun. It was summer, which meant Miss Hester was wearing one of her sleeveless blouses and knee-length polyester shorts with her white slip-on keds. From where I was hiding under the counter next to Liv, I had a clear view of the bottom of Miss Hester's green shorts and her bunion-y feet.
"I'm sorry, who did you say you were with?"
"The BEC." Liv kicked me, and I edged toward the hall.
"Of course, and that would be..."
Liv sighed impatiently. "The British Educational Consulate. As I said, we are looking for high-functioning schools in the United States to use as models for educational reform."
"High-functioning?"
Miss Hester sounded confused. I made my way around the corner on my hands and knees. "I can't believe no one informed you of my visit. May I speak with your headmaster, please?"
"Headmaster?"
By the time Miss Hester figured out what a headmaster was, I was halfway up the stairs. Beyond the blonde, even beyond the brains, Liv was a girl with a lot of hidden talents.
"All right, enough of the Charlotte's Web jokes. Grab your specimen firmly with one hand and make your incision down the belly, top to bottom, with your scissors."
I could hear Mrs. Wilson through the door. I knew what was going on in biology today from the smell alone, not to mention the commotion.
"I think I'm going to pass out." "Wilbur, no! Ew!"
I looked through the window in the door. Pink fetal pigs were lined up in a row on the lab tables. They were small, pinned to black waxy boards inside metal trays, except Lynx. Lynx's pig was massive. He raised his hand.
"Mrs. Wilson, I can't crack the sternum with scissors. Tank's too big for that." "Tank?" "Tank, my pig." "You can use the garden shears in the back of the room."
I knocked on the window. Link walked right by, but he didn't hear me. Eden was sitting at the long black lab table next to Lynx, holding her nose with one hand and poking around inside her pig with tweezers. I was surprised she was in there with the rest of the flunkies. Not because she was a rocket scientist or anything, but because I would have expected her mom and the DAR Mafia to find a way to get her out of it. Eden pulled a long yellow rope out of her pig.
"What is all this yellow stuff?"
She looked like she was going to hurl. Mrs. Wilson smiled. This was her favorite moment of the year.
"Miss Westerly, how many times did you go to the Dairy Queen this week? Did you have a shake with your fries and your burger? Onion rings? A side of pie?"
"What?"
"It's fat. Now, let's look for the bladder."
I knocked again as Link walked by with a pair of enormous shears. He saw me and opened the door.
"Mrs. Wilson, I gotta use the bathroom."
We took off down the hall, shears and all. When we banged our way around the corner in front of the attendance office, Liv smiled at Miss Hester and closed her notebook. "Thanks ever so much. I'll be in touch." She disappeared out the front door behind us, her blonde hair falling out of her bun. You would have to be brain damaged to not realize Liv was a teenager in her ripped jeans. Miss Hester watched in bewilderment, shaking her head.
"Redcoats?"
The thing about Link was, he never asked for details. He just went with it. He went with it when we tried to cut a real tire to make a tire swing. He went with it when I made him help me build a gator trap in my backyard. And every time I stole the beater to chase a girl the rest of the school thought was a freak. It was a great quality in a best friend, and sometimes I wondered if I would do the same for him if things were reversed. Because I was always the one who asked, and he was always the one who was game. Within 5 minutes, we were rolling down Jackson Street. We made it all the way to Dove Street when we pulled over at the Dairy Queen. I checked my watch. Amma would know I was gone by now. Marion would be waiting for Liv at the library if she hadn't missed her at breakfast. And Mrs. Wilson would have sent someone to drag Link out of the bathroom. We were running out of time. The actual plan didn't come together until we sat down with greasy food on greasy yellow trays at our greasy red table.
"Can't believe she ran off with Vampire Boy."
"How many times do I have to tell you he's an incubus?" Liv corrected.
"Whatever. If he's a blood incubus, he can suck your blood. Same difference."
Link shoved a biscuit into his mouth while he rolled another one around in the pool of gravy on his plate.
"A blood incubus is a demon. A vampire is something in a movie." I didn't want to do it, but there was something I had to get out on the table. "Ridley's with them, too." Link sighed and crumpled up the biscuit paper. His expression didn't change, but I knew he was feeling the same knot in his stomach I had in mine.
"Well, that blows."
He tossed the paper at the trash can. It hit the rim and fell onto the floor.
"You're sure they're in the tunnels?"
"That's what it looked like." On the way to the Dairy Queen, I told Link about the vision, but I left out the part about how I saw it in my bathroom mirror.
"They're headed for some place called the Great Barrier."
"A place that doesn't exist."
Liv was shaking her head, checking the rotating dials on her wrist. Link pushed away his plate, still covered with food.
"So let me get this straight. We're gonna go down into the tunnels and find this moon at a time with Liv's fancy watch?"
"Selenometer."
Liv didn't look up from copying numbers from the dials into her red notebook.
"Whatever. Why don't we tell Lena's family what's going on? Maybe they can make us invisible or lend us some crazy caster weapons."
A weapon, like the one I had with me right now. I could feel the curve of the arc light in my pocket. I had no idea how it worked, but maybe Liv did. She knew how to read the caster sky.
"It won't make us invisible, but I have this."
I held the sphere above the shiny plastic table.
"Dude, a ball? Seriously?"
Link wasn't impressed. Liv was stunned. She reached out tentatively, her hand hovering.
"Is that what I think it is?"
"It's an arc light.
Marion gave it to me on All Souls. Belonged to my mom." Liv tried to hide her irritation.
"Professor Ashcroft had an arc light all this time, and she never showed it to me."
"Here you go. Knock yourself out."
I dropped the sphere into Liv's hands. She held it carefully, as if it was an egg.
"Careful. Do you have any idea how rare these are?"
Liv couldn't take her eyes away from its glossy surface. Link sucked down the rest of his Coke until he hit ice.
"Anyone gonna clue me in here? What's it do?"
Liv was mesmerized.
"This is one of the most powerful weapons in the caster world. It's a metaphysical prison for an incubus, if you know how to use it."
I looked at her hopefully.
"Which, unfortunately, I don't."
Link poked at the arc light.
"Like incubus kryptonite?"
Liv nodded.
"Something like that."
There was no doubt the arc light was powerful, but it wasn't going to help us with the problem at hand. I was out of ideas.
"If this thing can't help us, how do we get into the tunnels?"
"It's not a holiday."
Liv handed me the arc light reluctantly.
If we're going to get into the Castor tunnels, it has to be through one of the outer doors. We can't go through the Lunae Libri.
So there are other ways in? Through these outer door things? Link asked.
Liv nodded. Yes, but only casters and a few mortals like Professor Ashcroft know where they are, and she's not going to tell us. I'm sure she's packing my things right now.
I had expected Liv to have the answer, but it was Link who came up with it.
You know what that means.
He grinned and put his arm around Liv.
You're finally gonna get your chance. Time for the Tunnel of Love.
Fairgrounds after the fair were just grounds. I kicked a clump of dirt and weeds.
Look, you can still see the indentations where the rides were.
Liv pointed, Lucille trailing behind her.
Yeah, but how do you know which rides the marks are from?
It seemed like a good idea at the Dairy Queen, but now we were standing in an empty field. Link shouted and waved from a few yards away.
I think this is where the Ferris wheel was. I can tell by all the cigarette butts. That old carny was chain-smoking all day.
We caught up with him. Liv pointed to a black patch in the distance.
Isn't that where Lena saw us?
What?
I stumbled over the word us.
I mean, saw me.
She blushed.
I think that's where the popcorn machine blew up when she walked by, before she popped the clown's balloon and made the little children cry.
How could I forget?
It was hard to find the impressions in the ground under the tall grass. I bent down and pushed the weeds out of the way, but there was nothing. Just a few paper snow cone cups and tickets. As I stood up, I felt the arc light heating up in my pocket again, and a dull buzzing. I took it out of my pocket, and it was glowing a clear blue. I waved Liv over.
What do you think this means?
She studied the sphere, watching the color intensify.
I have no idea. I've never read about them changing color.
What's up, kids?
Link wiped the sweat off his forehead with his ratty Black Sabbath t-shirt.
Whoa! When did it start with the mood ring action?
A second ago. I don't know why, but I started walking slowly, a few steps at a time. As I walked, the glow of the arc light grew stronger. Ethan, what are you doing?
Liv was right behind me.
I'm not sure.
I switched directions, and the color began to fade.
Why was it changing?
I turned around and headed back the other way. Sure enough, with every step, the arc light grew warmer in my hand, the vibrations stronger.
Look!
I opened my hand so Liv could see the deep blue color radiating from it.
What's happening?
I shrugged.
It's like the closer we get, the crazier it goes.
You don't think...
She stared down at her dusty silver high tops, thinking. We were thinking the same thing. I turned it over in my hand.
Could it be some kind of compass?
Liv watched as the sphere glowed so brightly that Lucille was leaping along beside us like she was trying to catch fireflies. When we reached a bleached patch of grass, Liv stopped. The arc light was swirling a dark, inky blue. I looked at the ground carefully.
There's nothing here.
Liv bent down, pushing the grass aside.
I'm not so sure about that.
A shape emerged as Liv brushed away the dirt.
Look at the lines. It's a door.
Link was right. It was like the trap door under the rug in Macon's room. I knelt next to them and ran my hand along the edges of the door, clearing away the remaining dirt. I looked at Liv.
How did you know?
You mean aside from the fact the arc light is going crazy?
She looked smug.
The outer doors aren't that difficult to find if you know what you're looking for.
I hope they aren't too difficult to open either.
Link pointed at the center of the door. There was a keyhole.
Liv sighed. It's locked. We need a Costa key. We can't get in without one.
Link pulled the massive garden shears he stole from the biolab out of his belt. Far be it from Link to put anything back in its rightful place.
Caster key my ass.
It's not going to work.
Liv squatted next to Link in the grass.
It's a Costa lock, not something on your locker door.
Link huffed as he worked the gardening shears into the crack.
You're not from around here. Isn't a door in this whole county that can't be opened with a set of pliers or a sharp toothbrush.
I looked at Liv. You realize he makes this stuff up.
Yeah?
Link grinned up at us as the door opened with a resentful creak. He held up his fist to me.
Pound it.
Liv was shocked.
Well, that's not in the books.
Link leaned over and looked inside.
It's dark, and there are no stairs. Looks like a pretty big drop.
Take a step. I knew what was coming.
Are you nuts?
Trust me. Link felt around with his foot, and a second later, he was standing in the air.
Man, where do casters get this stuff? Are there, like, caster carpenters? A supernatural construction union?
He disappeared out of sight. A second later, his voice echoed up from the hole.
It's not that far down. You two coming or what?
Lucille stared into the darkness and leaped into the hole. That cat must have picked up more than a little crazy living with my aunts all these years. I looked over the edge, and I could see the flickering light of a torch. Link was standing below us, Lucille sitting at his feet.
Ladies first.
Why is it men only say that when it's something horrible or dangerous?
Liv put one foot into the hole, uncertain.
No offense.
I smiled at her. None taken. Her silver sneakers dangled for a minute, and she wobbled off balance. I grabbed her hand.
You know, if we find Lena, she may be completely...
I know. I looked into Liv's calm blue eyes, which would never be gold or green. The sun lit her hair as blonde as honey. She smiled at me, and I let go of her hand. I realized she was the one steadying me. As I disappeared into the darkness behind her, the door banged shut after me, blocking out the sky. The entrance to the tunnel was dank and mossy, like the one that led from the Lunai Library to Ravenwood. The ceiling over the stairs was low, and the stone walls were old and weathered, like some kind of dungeon. Every drop of water and every sound echoed off the walls. At the bottom of the stairs, we found ourselves at a crossroads, not a proverbial one, but a real one.
So, which way do we go?
Link looked down two very different tunnels. This trip was more complicated than the one to Exile. That had been a straight shot, but this time it was different, and there were choices to be made. Choices I had to make. The tunnel to the left looked more like a meadow than a tunnel. As it widened, there were weeping willows hanging over a dusty footpath, framed by tangles of wildflowers and tall grass. Rolling hills spread out under a cloudless blue sky. You could almost imagine the birds chirping and see the rabbits nibbling grass, if it wasn't a caster tunnel, where nothing was ever as it seemed. The tunnel to the right wasn't a tunnel at all, but a curving city street underneath its own caster sky. The dark street was a sharp contrast to the sunny countryside scene of the first tunnel. Liv was scribbling notes in her book. I looked over her shoulder. Asynchronous time zones in adjacent tunnels. The only light came from a blinking motel sign at the end of the street. Tall apartment buildings with small iron balconies and fire escape ladders lined either side. Long wires crisscrossed the street from building to building, forming an intricate web with a few pieces of clothing caught in it. An abandoned trolley track was embedded in the asphalt.
"Which way do we go?"
Link was anxious. Wandering around creepy caster tunnels wasn't agreeing with him.
"I vote for the Wizard of Oz path."
He headed for the sunshine.
"I don't think we'll need to vote."
I took the arc light out of my pocket, its heat warming my hand before I noticed the light. Its ebony surface began to glow a pale green. Liv's eyes were wide.
"Amazing."
I took a few steps down the dark street, and the light intensified. Link came up behind us.
"Hello, I was walking away over there. You're not gonna stop me?"
"Watch this." I held the arc light high enough for him to see and kept walking.
"Killer flashlight."
Liv checked her selenometer.
"You were right. It's guiding us like a compass. My readings confirm it. The moon's magnetic pull is stronger in this direction, which is completely wrong for this time of year."
Link shook his head.
"I should have known we'd have to go down the creepy street. We're probably gonna get killed by another one of those Vexes."
Every time I took a step closer to the street, the arc light glowed a brighter and deeper shade of green.
"We're going this way."
"Of course we are."
After Link convinced himself we were headed for certain death, the dark street was nothing but a dark street. The short walk to where the motel sign was still blinking was uneventful. The street was a dead end, leading right up to a doorway under the sign. There was another street running perpendicular to it, lined with unlit doorways. Between the motel sign and the building next to it, there was a steep set of stone stairs. Another doorwell.
"Should we go left or right?"
Liv asked, stepping back onto the street. I looked at the arc light's incandescent light, now emerald green.
"Neither. We're going up."
I pushed open the heavy door at the top of the stairs. We stepped out from behind an enormous stone arch, stumbling into sunlight that reached through the branches of a gargantuan oak. A woman with white shorts and white hair pedaled a white bike with a white poodle riding in her white bike basket. A giant golden retriever chased the bike. The dog was pulling a man holding its leash. Lucille took one look at the retriever and took off into the bushes.
"Lucille!"
I bent down between the bushes, but she was gone.
"Great. I lost my aunt's cat again." "Technically, she's your cat. She lives with you."
Link thrashed around in the azaleas.
"Don't worry, she'll come back. Cats have a good sense of direction."
"How would you know that?"
Liv looked amused.
"Cat week. Like Shark Week, but with cats."
I shot him a look. Link turned red.
"What? My mom watches a lot of weird stuff on TV."
"Come on." As we stepped out from behind the trees, a girl with purple hair bumped into Link, almost dropping her giant sketch pad. We were surrounded by dogs and people and bikes and skaters in a park lined with azalea bushes and shaded by huge oaks. There was an ornate stone fountain in the center with carved naked mermen spitting water on each other. Walking paths radiated in every direction.
"What happened to the tunnels? Where are we?"
Link was more confused than usual.
"We're in some sort of park," Liv said.
I knew exactly where we were, and I smiled.
"Not some park. Forsyth Park. We're in Savannah."
"What?"
Liv was digging through her bag.
"Savannah, Georgia. I've been coming here with my mom since I was little."
Liv unfolded a map of what looked like the Castor Sky. I recognized the southern star, the seven-pointed one that was missing from the real Castor Sky.
"It doesn't make sense. If the Great Barrier exists, which I'm not saying I believe, it's definitely not in the middle of a mortal city."
I shrugged. This is where it led us. What can I say?
We walked like 5 miles. How can we be in Savannah?
Link still hadn't grasped the idea that things were different in the tunnels. Liv clicked open her pen, muttering to herself,
"Place and time not subject to mortal physics."
Two little old ladies were pushing two tiny dogs in strollers. We were definitely in Savannah. Liv closed her red book.
Time, space, distance. They're all different down here. The tunnels are part of the Castor world, not the mortal one.
As if on cue, the glow of the arc light faded to a glossy black. I slipped it back into my pocket.
What the? How do we know where to go from here?
Link panicked, but I didn't.
We don't need it. I think I know where we're supposed to go.
Liv crinkled her brow.
How?
There's only one person I know in Savannah.
June 18th. Through the Looking Glass. My Aunt Caroline lived on East Liberty Street near the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist. I hadn't been to her house in a few years, but I knew to keep heading up Bull Street because her house was on the historic Savannah trolley tour, which ran up and down Bull. Besides, the streets ran from the park to the river, and there was a public square about every other block to mark your way. It was hard to get lost in Savannah, whether you were a wayward or not. Between Savannah and Charleston, you could find a historic tour for just about anything. Plantation tours, southern cooking tours, Daughters of the Confederacy tours, ghost tours, my personal favorite, and the classic historic home tours. Aunt Caroline's house had been part of that one for as long as I could remember. Her attention to detail was legendary, not only in our family, but in all of Savannah. She was the curator of the Savannah History Museum, and she knew as much about the history of every building, landmark, and scandal in the City of Oaks as my mom had known about the Civil War. It was no small feat, considering scandals were as common as tours around here.
Are you sure you know where you're going, man? I think we should take a break and get something to eat. I'd kill for a burger.
Link had more faith in the arc light's ability to navigate than mine. Lucille, who had reappeared, sat down at his feet and cocked her head to the side. She wasn't so sure either.
Keep heading up toward the river. We'll hit East Liberty sooner or later.
Look, I pointed to the steeple of the cathedral a few blocks away.
That's St. John's Cathedral. We're almost there.
20 minutes later, we were still wandering in circles near the cathedral. Link and Liv were losing their patience, and I didn't blame them. I looked down East Liberty for something familiar.
It's a yellow house.
Yellow must be a popular color. Every other house on this street is yellow.
Even Liv was annoyed with me. I'd taken us around the same block 3 times now.
I thought it was off Lafayette Square.
I think we should find a phone book and look up her number.
Liv wiped the sweat from her forehead. I squinted at a figure in the distance.
We don't need a phone book. That's the house at the end of the block.
Liv rolled her eyes.
How do you know?
Because Aunt Dell is standing out front.
There was nothing weirder than ending up in Savannah after walking only a few hours in the Castor tunnels in some sort of altered time. Except getting to Aunt Caroline's and finding Lena's Aunt Dell standing by the curb waving. She was expecting us.
Ethan, I'm so glad I finally found you. I've been everywhere. Athens, Dublin, Cairo. You were looking for us in Egypt and Ireland?
Liv looked as confused as I felt, but this was something I could clear up for her. Georgia, Athens, Dublin, and Cairo
our city's in Georgia." Liv blushed. Sometimes I forgot she was as far away from Gatlin as Lena, only in a different way. Aunt Del took my hand and patted it affectionately.
"Aurelia tried to divine your location, but Georgia was all she could come up with. Unfortunately, divination is more of an art than a science. Thank the stars I found you."
"What are you doing here, Aunt Del?"
"Lena's missing. We were hoping she was with you."
She sighed, realizing she was wrong.
"She's not, but I think I can find her."
Aunt Del smoothed her rumpled skirt.
"Then I can help you."
Link scratched his head. He had met Aunt Del, but he'd never seen a demonstration of her gifts as a palimpsest. It was clear he couldn't see how a scattered old woman was going to help us. After spending a dark night with her at Genevieve Duquesne's grave, I knew better. I struck the heavy iron knocker against the door. Aunt Caroline opened the door, wiping her hands on her grits apron, girls raised in the South. She smiled, her eyes crinkling at the corners.
"Ethan, whatever are you doing here? I didn't know you were going to be in Savannah."
I hadn't thought far enough ahead to come up with a good lie, so I had to settle for a bad one.
"I'm in town visiting a friend."
"Where's Lena?"
"She couldn't make it."
I stepped away from the door so I could distract her with introductions. "You know Link, and this is Liv and Lena's Aunt Delphine." I was sure the first thing Aunt Caroline would do after I left was call my dad to say how nice it had been to see me. So much for keeping my whereabouts a secret from Amma and living to see my 17th birthday.
"Nice to see you again, ma'am."
I could always count on Link to be a good old boy when I needed him to be. I tried to think of someone in Savannah my aunt wouldn't know, as if that was possible. Savannah was bigger than Gatlin, but all southern towns are the same. Everyone knows each other. Aunt Caroline ushered us all inside. In a matter of seconds, she disappeared and reappeared with sweet tea and a plate of Benny Babies, maple cookies that were even sweeter than the tea.
"Today has been the strangest day."
"What do you mean?" I reached for a cookie.
"This morning, when I was at the museum, someone broke into the house. But that's not even the oddest part. They didn't take a thing. Ransacked the entire attic and didn't even touch the rest of the house."
I glanced at Liv. There were no coincidences. Aunt Del might have been thinking the same thing, too, but it was hard to tell. She was looking a little woozy, like she was having trouble sorting through all the different things that had happened in this room since the house was built in 1820. She was probably flashing through 200 years all at once while we sat here eating cookies. I remembered what she said about her gift the night in the graveyard with Genevieve. Palimpsestry was a great honor and an even greater burden. I wondered what Aunt Caroline could possibly have that was worth stealing.
"What's in the attic?"
"Nothing, really.
Christmas ornaments, some architectural plans for the house, some of your mother's old papers."
Liv nudged my foot underneath the table. I was thinking the same thing. Why weren't they in the archive?
"What sort of papers?"
Aunt Caroline put out some more cookies. Link was eating them faster than she could serve them.
"I'm not really sure. A month or so before she died, your mother asked me if she could store a few boxes here. You know your mother with her files."
"Do you mind if I take a look? I'm working at the library this summer with Aunt Marion, and she may be interested in some of them."
I tried to sound casual.
"Be my guest, but it's a mess up there."
She picked up the empty plate.
"I have a few calls to make, and I still have to finish filing the police report. But I'll be down here if you need me."
Aunt Caroline was right. The attic was a mess. Clothes and papers were strewn everywhere. Someone must have dumped the contents of every box up there into one gigantic pile. Liv picked up a few stray papers.
How the...
Link looked at Aunt Dell, embarrassed.
I mean, how the heck are we gonna find anything in here? What are we even looking for?
He kicked an empty box across the floor.
Anything that could have been my mom's. Someone was looking for something up here.
Everyone dove into a different part of the pile. Aunt Dell found a hatbox full of Civil War shell casings and round balls.
There used to be a lovely hat in here.
I picked up my mom's old high school yearbook and a field guide to the battlefield at Gettysburg. I noticed how worn the field guide was compared to her yearbook. That was my mom. Liv knelt over a stack of papers.
I think I found something. I mean, it seems these belong to your mother, but they're nothing, really. Old sketches of Ravenwood Manor and some notes on Gatlin's history.
Anything that had to do with Ravenwood was something. She handed me the notes and I flipped through the pages. Gatlin's Civil War registries, yellowed sketches of Ravenwood Manor and the older buildings in town, the historical society, the old firehouse, even our house, Waits Landing. But none of it seemed to amount to anything.
Here, kitty kitty. Hey, I found a friend for...
Link lifted up a cat preserved by the southern art of taxidermy, then dropped it when he realized it was a stuffed, dead cat with mangy black fur.
Lucille. There has to be something else. Whoever was here wasn't looking for Civil War registries.
Maybe they found what they came for, Liv shrugged.
I looked at Aunt Dell.
There's only one way to find out.
A few minutes later, we were all sitting cross-legged on the floor like we were in a campfire circle. Or a seance.
I'm really not sure this is a good idea.
It's the only way to find out who broke in here and why.
Aunt Dell nodded, barely convinced.
All right. Remember, if you feel sick, put your head between your knees. Now, join hands.
Link looked at me.
What's she talking about? Why would we feel sick?
I grabbed Liv's hand, completing the circle. It was soft and warm in mine. But before I could think about the fact that we were holding hands, images started to flash before my eyes. One after the next, opening and closing like doors. Each image cued the next, like dominoes, or one of those flip books I read as a kid. Lena, Ridley, and John dumping out boxes in the attic.
It has to be here. Keep looking.
John tosses old books onto the floor.
How can you be so sure?
Lena reaches inside another box, her hand covered in black designs.
She knew how to find it without the star.
Another door opened, Aunt Caroline dragging boxes across the attic floor. She kneels in front of a box, holding an old photo of my mother, and runs her hand over the picture, sobbing. And another, my mother, her hair hanging over her shoulder, held back by her red reading glasses. I could see her as clearly as if she was standing right in front of me. She scribbles madly in a weathered leather journal, then rips out the page, folds it, and slides it into an envelope. She scrawls something across the front of the envelope and slips it into the back of the journal. Then she pushes an old trunk away from the wall. Behind the trunk, she pulls a loose board free from the wainscoting. She looks around as if she senses someone might be watching and slides the journal into the narrow opening. Aunt Dell let go of my hand.
Holy crap!
Link was way beyond remembering his manners in front of a lady. He was green and stuck his head between his knees immediately like he was coming in for a crash landing.
I hadn't seen him like that since the day after Savannah Snow dared him to drink an old bottle of peppermint schnapps.
I'm so sorry. I know it's difficult to acclimate after a trip.
Aunt Dell patted Link's back.
You're doing fine for your first time.
I didn't have time to think about everything I'd seen, so I focused on one thing. She knew how to find it without the star. John was talking about the Great Barrier. He thought my mom knew something about it, something she may have written in her journal. Liv and I must have been thinking the same thing because we touched the old trunk at the same time. It's heavy. Be careful. I started to pull it away from the wall. It felt like someone had filled it with bricks. Liv reached for the wall, working the board free, but she didn't reach into the opening. I put my hand inside and immediately touched the battered leather. I pulled out the journal, feeling the weight of it in my hand. It was a piece of my mother. I flipped to the back. My mother's delicate handwriting stared back at me from the front of the envelope. Macon. I ripped it open, unfolding the single sheet. If you're reading this, it means I wasn't able to get to you in time to tell you myself. Things are much worse than any of us could have imagined. It may already be too late. But if there is a chance, you are the only one who will know how to prevent our worst fears from becoming reality. Abraham is alive. He's been in hiding, and he's not alone. Seraphine is with him, as devoted a disciple as your father. You have to stop them before we all run out of time. L.J. My eyes dragged across the bottom of the page. L.J. Lila Jane. I noticed something else. The date. I felt like I'd been kicked in the stomach. March 21st. A month before my mother's accident. Before she was murdered. Liv stepped away, sensing she was witnessing something private and painful. I flipped through the pages of the journal, looking for answers. There was another copy of the Ravenwood family tree. I'd seen it before in the archive, but this one looked different. Some of the names were crossed out. As I turned the pages, a loose paper slipped out and floated to the floor. I picked it up, unfolding the fragile sheet. It was vellum, thin and slightly transparent, like tracing paper. There were strange shapes penned on one side, misshapen ovals with dips and rises, as if a child were drawing clouds. I turned to Liv, holding the vellum open so she could see the shapes. She shook her head without a word. Neither one of us knew what it meant. I folded the delicate paper and replaced it in the journal, skipping ahead to the end. I turned to the last page. There was something else that didn't make any sense. At least, not to me. In luce cae cae caligines sunt, et in caliginibus lux. In arcu imperium est, et in imperio nox. Instinctively, I ripped out the page and shoved it in my pocket. My mother was dead because of the letter, and possibly what was written on these pages. They belonged with me now.
Ethan, are you all right?
Aunt Dell's voice was full of concern. I was so far from right, I couldn't remember what it felt like. I had to get out of this room, away from my mom's past, out of my head. Be right back. I bolted down the stairs to the guest room and lay on the bed in my dirty clothes. I stared at the ceiling, painted sky blue, just like the one in my bedroom. Stupid bees. The joke was on them, and they didn't even know. Or maybe, on me. I was numb, the way you get when you try to feel everything at once. I might as well have been Aunt Dell walking into this old house. Abraham Ravenwood wasn't a piece of the past. He was alive, hiding in the shadows with Seraphine. My mother had known, and Seraphine had killed her because of it. My eyes were blurry.
I wiped them, expecting tears, but there was nothing there. I squeezed my eyes shut, but when I opened them, all I could see were colors and lights flashing by me, as if I was running. I saw bits and pieces, a wall, dented silver trash cans, cigarette butts. Whatever I'd experienced when I was staring into my bathroom mirror was happening again. I tried to get up, but I was too dizzy. The pieces kept flying by, finally slowing so my mind could catch up. I was in a room, a bedroom, maybe. It was hard to tell from where I was standing. The floor was gray concrete, and the white walls were covered in the same black designs I had seen on Lena's hands. As I looked at them, they seemed to move. I scanned the room. She had to be here somewhere. I feel so different from everyone else, even other casters. It was Lena's voice. I looked up, following the sound. They were above me, lying on the black painted ceiling. Lena and John were head to head, talking back and forth without looking at each other. They were staring at the floor the way I stared at my ceiling at night when I couldn't fall asleep. Lena's hair fell around her shoulders, flat against the ceiling, as if she was lying on the floor. It would seem impossible if I hadn't already seen it. Only this time, she wasn't the only one on the ceiling, and I wasn't there to pull her back down. No one can explain my powers to me, not even my family, because they don't know. She sounded miserable and far away. And every day I wake up and I can do things I couldn't the day before.
It's the same for me. One day I woke up and thought about somewhere I wanted to go, and a second later, I was there.
John was tossing something up in the air and catching it over and over, except he was tossing it toward the floor instead of the ceiling. Are you saying that you didn't know you could travel?
Not until I did it.
He closed his eyes, but he didn't stop tossing the ball.
What about your parents? Did they know?
I never knew my parents. They took off when I was little. Even supernaturals know a freak when they see one.
If he was lying, I couldn't tell. His voice was bitter and hurt, which sounded genuine to me. Lena rolled onto her side and propped herself up on her elbow so she could see him.
I'm sorry. That must have been awful. At least I had my grandma to take care of me.
She looked at the ball and it froze in midair.
Now I don't have anyone.
The ball dropped to the floor. It bounced a few times and rolled under the bed. John turned to look at her.
You have Ridley. And me.
Trust me, once you get to know me, you won't be able to get away fast enough.
They were only inches apart now.
You're wrong. I know what it's like to feel alone, even when you're with other people.
She didn't say anything. Is that what it was like when she was with me? Did she feel alone, even when we were together? When she was in my arms?
El.
I felt sick when he said it.
When we get to the Great Barrier, it's gonna be different. I promise.
Most people say it doesn't exist.
That's because they don't know how to find it. You can only get there through the tunnels.
I'm going to take you there. He lifted her chin so she could see into his eyes.
I know you're scared, but you have me, if you want me.
Lena looked away, wiping one of her eyes with the back of her hand. I could see the black designs, which looked darker now. Less like Sharpie and more like Ridley's and John's tattoos. She was staring right at me, but she couldn't see me. I have to make sure I can't hurt anyone else. It doesn't matter what I want.
It matters to me.
John ran his thumb under her eye, catching her tears, leaning closer to her.
You can trust me. I'd never hurt you.
He pulled her to his chest,
her head resting on his shoulder.
Can I?
I couldn't hear anything else, and it became harder to see her, like I was zooming out somehow. I blinked hard, trying to stay focused, but when I opened my eyes again, all I could see was the swirling blue ceiling. I turned on my side, facing the wall. I was back in Aunt Caroline's room, and they were gone. Together, wherever they were. Lena was moving on. She was opening up to John, and he was reaching a part of her I thought was gone. Maybe I was never meant to reach it. Macon had lived in the dark, and my mom in the light. Maybe we weren't meant to find a way that mortals and casters could be together, because we weren't meant to be. Someone knocked on the door, even though it was open.
Ethan, are you okay?
Liv. Her footsteps were quiet, but I could hear them. I didn't move. The edge of the bed sank a little when she sat down. I felt her hand as she rubbed the back of my head. It was soothing and familiar, as if she'd done it 1,000 times. That was the thing about Liv. It was like I'd known her forever. She always seemed to sense what I needed, as if she knew things I didn't even know about myself.
Ethan, it's going to be okay. We'll figure out what it all means, I promise.
I knew she meant it. I rolled over. The sun had set, and the room was dark. I hadn't bothered to turn on the lights, but I could make out her silhouette as she stared down at me.
I thought you weren't supposed to get involved.
I'm not. It's the first thing Professor Ashcroft taught me. She paused.
But I can't help it.
I know. We stared at each other in the darkness, her hand resting against my jaw, where it had fallen when I rolled over. But I was really seeing her, the possibility of her, for the first time. I felt something. There was no denying it, and Liv felt it too. I could tell every time she looked at me. Liv slid down and curled up against me, leaning her head on my shoulder. My mom found a way to move on after Macon. She had fallen in love with my dad, which seemed to prove you could lose the love of your life and fall in love all over again. Didn't it? I heard a quiet whisper, not from inside my heart, but a breath away from my ear. Liv leaned closer.
You'll figure this out, like everything else. Besides, you have something most waywards don't have.
Yeah? What's that?
An excellent keeper.
I slid my hand to the back of Liv's neck. Honeysuckle and soap. That's what she smelled like.
Is that why you came? Because I needed a keeper?
She didn't answer right away. I could sense her trying to work it out in her mind, how much she should say, what she should risk. I knew that's what she was doing because I was doing the same thing.
It's not the only reason, but it should be.
Because you aren't supposed to get involved?
I could feel her heart beating against my chest. She fit under my shoulder perfectly. Because I don't want to get hurt. She was scared, but not of dark casters or mutant incubuses or golden eyes. She was afraid of something simpler, but equally dangerous. Smaller, but infinitely more powerful. I pulled her closer.
Me neither.
Because I was afraid of it too. We didn't say anything else. I held her close, and I thought about all the ways a person could get hurt. The ways I could hurt her and hurt myself. Those two things were intertwined somehow. It's hard to explain, but when you were as closed off as I was the past few months, opening up felt about as wrong as stripping naked in church. Hearts will go and stars will follow. One is broken. One is hollow.
That had been our song, Lena's and mine, and I had been broken. Did that mean I had to stay hollow? Or was there something different?